begin, if you don't mind. I'm sitting in a small studio with blue walls. Would you describe where you are right now?
I'm in a small hotel room in Mannheim where I'm playing the Beethoven Concerto tonight.
You are performing tonight. Is that in a matter of hours from now?
Yeah, in 2 hours.
Are you near the hall? Will you?
Yes, I'm really nearby, so no worries about not making the concert.
First, I should say I've worked at this radio station for 26 years, and I remember receiving the first set of Bach sonatas and partitas that you recorded on Virgin Classics.
Oh, the first one. Yeah. Okay. That is a while ago.
It was. And you've recorded them since then on the Ondine label.
Yes. I recorded them twice since then, but the Ondine is the last one, and I also think the last one.
Well, I've been reading your concert schedule as well, and I see a man who performs up to 12 times a month in a variety of settings, from chamber music, solo recitals, concerts with orchestra. Is this then the ideal blend of concerts and music for you?
For me, that's ideal, because I want to jump from one thing to the other, and I also never have an idea about what repertoire should be in a given year or month or whatever. I just play what's the nicest option for that given time. Keeps me also somehow awake, I think.
In the music industry, there's a push and a pull between what presenters think the audiences want and what, you know, the artist would prefer to do. Did you have to stand up for yourself to achieve this kind of variety of schedule? Did you have to make any hard decisions?
Well, it is a bit easier nowadays, of course, because I've been in many places, and I come back to orchestras where I know them and they know me, so one has a little more flexibility and one knows exactly what pieces to do with which partners. And other than that, I have to say I never felt that I would have to do anything that isn't also what I want to do. But that's also, I'm playing tonight, in my rough counting should be my 340th performance of the Beethoven Concerto. And that I love to do. And it's not because people like to hear the Beethoven Concerto, maybe more than the Schnittke Concerto. It is also because I see this every night as a huge challenge for me and for the audience, a mesmerizing piece that is certainly not a soap opera or easy listening. So there's nothing wrong with that. But I also love to play the Ligeti Concerto and repertoire that is not mainstream repertoire. It is, and I think with a convincing performance, usually there is very little music that cannot totally connect with the audience. And this would then be repertoire which I also wouldn't like to play. So I don't see a discrepancy between what I want to do and what people want to hear.
I should tell listeners that your program for October 26th will begin with a Beethoven sonata, and then we hear a sonata by Dmitri Shostakovich. After the break, three pieces by Georgi Ligeti, whose concerto you just mentioned. Finally, the sonata in A by the late 19th century composer César Franck.
That maybe reflects that nicely. Because it is a frame of a beautiful, somehow life-affirming sonatas in A major, the Beethoven and the Franck. And in the same right comes the Shostakovich sonata, which is a desperate cry for exactly those feelings, but about something lost and bleak and despairing, but with some moments where his yearning and his beauty shines through even stronger. So all the things that for Beethoven still are totally allowed and there, Shostakovich really has to fight for. And the Tripezzi by Kurtak, there are utterly beautiful and very remote gestures to be contrasted with the with expansive beauty of the César Franck Sonata. And I would never say one music is better or more important than the other, because for me, music has to be a mirror of what can happen in life and what goes through our heart. And so this is a program where I would say that reflects that aspect quite well.
Your longtime friend Lars Voigt, who's a brilliant pianist and also a conductor now, is joining you for this recital tour. Would you tell us a little about him and your musical relationship?
Yeah, for me, he is just the most amazing and the deepest piano player I can imagine. His sound world is utterly, well, it's out of this world, because he's the piano player where you can play a big sonata and he will sound like a string orchestra or like a woodwind section or whatever is needed. So with a big Steinway, with him, balance is never, ever a problem. So one, he has a touch that I don't know how he does it. And he also, of course, in his own right, his interpretations are for me the most touching and fascinating. So I'm very lucky to be on tour with him and to share a big part of my musical life with somebody like him. And he was just announced yesterday the new chief conductor of the Paris Chamber Orchestra, which is, of course, another side of his deep involvement with music in the last years.
I didn't quite catch that. Did you say Paris? The Paris?
The Orchestre de Chambre de Paris. He's the new chief conductor of them.
That's wonderful.
Since yesterday. Yeah.
Well, congratulations to Mr. Voigt. Yeah. I'd like to concentrate perhaps on the Shostakovich, which was the least familiar for me. You've already described it as despairing. You know, whenever I talk to people about Shostakovich, we do get very pulled into discussing his political situation and his relationship to the Soviet state. But I wonder if we can talk about something other.
Yes, and I wonder... I mean, a person composes and he doesn't write a political manifesto anyway. Him as a personality, he was a quite troubled person and insecure and scared, and of course scared for very good reasons, because he easily could have ended up in horrible camps or forbidden to compose, which actually happened to him. So the scare has... it's not paranoia, it has a reality behind it. But I think when he sings his music, except for some pieces that are clearly with a political message, then let him also be a composer in his own right and a human being in his own right, who is in this piece searching for some... In the last moment, he's the big Passacaglia, which is a form he goes back to a lot in the last 30 years of his composing. But that it is getting more and more intense and quite menacing. And then there is a few moments where he really opens his heart. And this is, I think, what the sonata is written for after a very long and violent scherzo. We come to these few chord progressions which are really mystical and magic in their effect. And then is something, now we come back to the politics of it, there is something very touching. He quotes Alban Berg Violin Concerto in the last movement and a bit from the lyric suite for string quartet by Alban Berg. And I only can see that as a little sign of saying sorry, because he had to officially say that Alban Berg and Schoenberg and there are bourgeois formalists and their music is worth nothing. He had to say that openly on the radio. But here he comes and he puts little quotes from Alban Berg as if to say, between us, you know how I value your music. And this is also a moment which is, there is a little politics in that, but it's also a simple personal statement. He himself said, Mahler, the Song of Earth, is the most perfect piece of music ever written. So this beginning of the Viennese school and that music, which is where Altenberg is the direct follower of, is totally important for him. And so these things appear in his music and at their own right. And I find that very, very touching.
A piece from 1968, and Shostakovich would die a couple of years later, I think.
Yeah, 75 maybe.
David Oistrakh, the first, it was written for Oistrakh, yeah, I think.
Yes, I didn't listen to the sonata, but I heard him with both violin concerti. Mm. And as with a fantastic violin play like that, one with the passage of time, one still has to say, for me, the music of Shostakovich is much more broken and even tender and human. And with David Oistrakh, the big sound is even going through if it's marked in pianissimo, dolce. And so I admire his playing, and I'm nevertheless, it's one case where I know that he knew the composer, but I don't feel too obliged to go too much in that direction, because I find it quite often contradictory to what I can read in the music.
Well, Mr. Tetzlaff, thank you for chatting with me today. I can tell our listeners that this tour will take you before Kalamazoo to venues in Miami and New Orleans, then Kalamazoo, then Chicago. That's quite the schedule, and then back to Europe.
Yes, I think we have 8 concerts, but in 9 days, so there must be a free day somewhere.
I'm looking forward to this emotional narrative you'll bring to these wonderful pieces on your program, and happy travels.
Yeah, thank you so much. Bye-bye.